It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here as we discuss Native American elders developing Alzheimer's disease and the reality of health disparities, the barriers to care and associated costs. The Alzheimer's Association says as many as 1 in 3 Native American elders will develop Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. Join in with your questions, your thoughts on this, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Adrienne Johnson is here, assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She is a licensed clinical psychologist at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention and lead author of a recent article published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Adrienne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
You found dementia diagnoses among Indigenous people over age 65. It costs $880 million to $1.9 billion annually. Can you put that into perspective for us? What do those costs mean?
So what we did was we looked at Wisconsin Department of Health Services data, and we were trying to compare the cost of people who had dementia, Indigenous peoples who had dementia, versus those who did not. And we found that the added cost of a dementia diagnosis was exactly what you said, $880 million to $1.9 billion annually. And that's the cost across the country. The interesting thing that we also found is that when we went more broadly and we thought about misdiagnosis of dementia, given that about half of people with dementia aren't actually diagnosed, we estimated that the cost of dementia and misdiagnosis in American Indian and Alaska Native costs an additional $1.2 to $2.5 billion per year.
Where would the misdiagnosis be coming from? What do you mean by that?
Great question. So when we looked at the misdiagnosis, the things that we kind of added into our statistical models were malnutrition and adult failure to thrive. And those may be signs of dementia, but it's important to note that we were doing this research while looking at Department of Health Service electronic health record data. We know that some of the misdiagnoses come from really people not coming in to see their healthcare provider. It's also potentially due to beliefs that it's from other issues. So there's a variety of problems in terms of accurately diagnosing dementia, and we do have very good standards to diagnose dementia.
This Wisconsin electronic health data you pulled, it could be analyzed in myriad ways. What made you interested in looking at it through this lens?
Well, we were really interested in highlighting the importance of dementia diagnosis in American Indian and Alaska Native peoples. And one way to show importance is cost. So we wanted to show, given that unfortunately no one has looked at the cost of dementia in American Indian populations broadly, that it was a very high cost. And that was something that our reviewers definitely noted, that it felt especially high.
Your analysis also mentioned that there is likely an undercount. Why would there be an undercount?
The undercount is for a variety of reasons. One is that misdiagnosis piece that we already discussed. So we were looking at health record data, and the people that we included in the dementia diagnosis were those who had a dementia diagnosis. Again, about half of people with dementia aren't accurately diagnosed. So that's one form. Another piece is that we are looking at American Indian and Alaska Native adults, and we looked at Medicaid eligible state program eligible data. We didn't look at Indian Health Service data, which is another smaller pot of money, and that is like the primary source of health services for American Indians. So there's even more money we're not looking into at this point that is accounting for that added cost of dementia. And then the last piece is that we know in terms of the national census, American Indians are generally undercounted. So when we used our Wisconsin data to estimate the national cost of dementia, we had to note that there may be an undercount of the amount of American Indians in this country, and that may be therefore lowering the potential amount that we're estimating.
It would factor into what you're seeing as well. Yes. Talking about new research into the costs of Alzheimer's and related dementias with Adrian Johnson with us, a clinical psychologist at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. You can join in with your questions about this research, about Alzheimer's and what you have experienced, 800-642-1234. Adrian, what could policymakers take from your research?
I think one of the biggest takes is to really highlight the extreme cost of dementia in American Indian peoples, and as best we can, to potentially highlighting the importance of allocating money for the treatment and prevention of this disease. I work very strongly in the prevention field personally. And one of the things I want to highlight is when thinking about those resources, speaking to Indigenous peoples, speaking to them to say, what is the best way to use this? How can we best help?
What is the trajectory, I guess, for Alzheimer's and related dementias in Native populations? As you look out into decades to come, where is this disease headed?
Yes. So unfortunately, it's not looking good. You mentioned earlier that as many as 1 in 3 Native American elders will develop Alzheimer's disease or some form of dementia. So by 2060, that number of individuals 65 and older who are American Indian or Alaska Natives living with dementia is expected to increase fourfold. So that's a huge, huge increase. And a lot of that is due to preventable factors like smoking, which is something I look into, but also alcohol use and diabetes and a variety of other issues.
As you mentioned there, the input of tribal leaders when developing programs to address Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, why is that input so critical?
Well, we did this work, and really the work of Carrie Gleason, co-author on this project, with the eye towards genuine community engagement and the notion that if you're going to allocate resources towards a community, it's important to determine what that community truly needs for it to have the biggest impact. And Dr. Gleason is working with the Oneida Nations here in Wisconsin to try to understand that better.
We have clinical psychologist Adrian Johnson, who has analyzed healthcare cost electronic data and Native Americans battling Alzheimer's. She's based at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Call in with your questions about Alzheimer's and meeting the healthcare needs of Indigenous communities, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the high financial and healthcare burdens and disparities of Indigenous elders living with Alzheimer's. This is Wisconsin health data contributing to new insights on the health inequities, published recently in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Join in with your questions, your comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Clinical psychologist Adrian Johnson is an assistant professor at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, studying the impacts specifically on smoking and brain health. You know, help us unpack smoking and brain health. What is the relationship between the two?
Yes.
So smoking accounts for up to a 70% increased risk in Alzheimer's disease onset. And smoking in more recent data accounts for at least 5 to 6% of current Alzheimer's and dementia cases overall in the United States. That number is even higher internationally. So we know that smoking is a very large modifiable risk factor for dementia, meaning a risk factor that we can change, which is especially important.
What is the tobacco doing to the brain specifically?
So there's some research suggesting that the main biological process is through oxidative stress, and that's what's causing some of the brain issues. But there's been less work focused on the direct connection between smoking and Alzheimer's disease. There's a lot of research supporting the indirect relation between smoking. We know that it increases at least five risk factors for dementia, including diabetes, heart attack, blood pressure, and a variety of others. So there's definitely more work to be done, and that's something I'm particularly interested in.
Right, because smoking can, tighten and damage blood vessels, which would be a bad thing for the brain, restricting blood flow to the brain. Is that,
Exactly.
and when you look at vascular dementia in particular, is that the issue there with the effects on the brain health and the blood flow?
So that is definitely one of the large components, and I think you said it perfectly. It makes sense that we know smoking causes issues cardiovascular. So of course that would cause issues in the brain, but unfortunately that's been less looked at than other health issues. We know about cancer, we know about heart issues, and a variety of other things. For vascular dementia, which is the second most common form of dementia, that is kind of the notion that that's how that's causing those issues. But I think it's really important to note that smoking also increases the risk of Alzheimer's disease, which is the most common form of dementia and one that's particularly scary and difficult to think about.
So, there have been a look. There has been a look at what nicotine does with dementia. Is there research that you can help us understand the effects of nicotine on brain health?
That's a really great question. So nicotine is the main addictive ingredient in cigarettes. And we've actually seen that nicotine is a stimulant, meaning it can kind of increase in short periods our attention and our ability to focus. There is research that's being done now to look at whether nicotine patches, which are what people sometimes use to help them quit smoking, can help treat mild cognitive impairment, which is kind of right before dementia. But it's really important to note that nicotine is not the only ingredient in cigarettes. There are thousands of chemicals in cigarettes that cause huge amounts of damage in the body. So sometimes there's a misconception that because nicotine may be helpful in some ways as an individual ingredient, then of course cigarettes will be helpful. And that's actually been shown to be incorrect. There was a meta-analysis in 2010 by Cataldo and colleagues that showed that the influence of the tobacco industry also really affected the suggested link between smoking and dementia. And when those people who were not affiliated with the tobacco industry showed their results, there was clearly a negative effect of cigarette smoking on dementia of all forms.
Yeah, the other carcinogens don't just fade away into the backdrop, and it's just
Exactly.
so. I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment as we look at the relationship between smoking and brain health with Adrienne Johnson, an assistant professor at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. You can join in 800-642-1234. John in Boaz. John, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi, I have done some research to help dementia, and I think that reliving good memories, including music, is very entertaining for people with dementia.
Music therapy and its impact on dementia. Adrian, can you go that direction?
Yeah, I can. So I think that's a great point, and there is a little bit of work supporting music therapy. There's actually also a large component of both singing and engaging in that activity, and there's work being done in Milwaukee associated with the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute to do a choir and to have that both social connection and singing be a form of treatment for those who have dementia. So I agree and I appreciate you bringing that up.
How do you get someone who is suffering from dementia, how do you get them to stop smoking or start on that path to stop smoking?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that we want to keep in mind is that there's different phases or levels of dementia. And when we get to different levels, the further on, the more severe and functionally impaired an individual might be. So when we're talking about earlier stages, we really want them to do the same thing that we would have individuals who don't have dementia. First is to use some form of evidence-based treatment, and that could be nicotine replacement therapy. There's also two other medications that we know work. And there's counseling, and that counseling is very behaviorally focused. It's focused on when do you smoke? What else can you do in that time? Setting a quit date, for example. And one thing I really want to highlight is that in Wisconsin and across the nation, we have the quit line, which is 1-800-QUIT-NOW, and that can offer free treatment and medication. But for American Indians, specifically in Wisconsin, there is the American Indian quit line, and that is 1-888-724-7848, and that can offer up to 12 weeks of free medication to help you quit.
Really great resources there. And you're currently focused on the messaging regarding smoking cessation. What are the methods of smoking cessation you're investigating?
Yes. So one of the big things I'm trying to highlight for the community, both the medical and general community, is the link between smoking and dementia, and that within as little as 3 years of quitting, your risk of developing dementia, if you don't already have it, can be comparable to somebody who has never smoked. So the types of treatment to your question that we focus on are those same evidence-based treatments that we talked about. And the messaging, which we started by really asking older adults who do smoke, what messages would you want to hear? We asked them, would dementia be a motivational message? Would dementia, that risk and ways to lower that risk be helpful? And the overwhelming answer we got, was yes. So that was particularly motivating. So we've developed those messages and we're currently testing them now, and that research is ongoing.
What about resolutions or saying, hey, I'm going to start something on Monday? I'm going to, what about personal motivation like that with resolutions?
It's a great time for quitting smoking and making changes. And setting a date that's within the next 2 weeks is especially important because we know our motivation goes up and down. And setting a specific date, whether it be this Monday or another day, is a great way to start. The other things to keep in mind for smoking cessation are clearing out your space, your house, your car, your pockets in your winter coat of cigarettes and lighters and other things that make it easier to have a lapse because it is a very addictive substance and we want to set you up for success.
So really going through your entire environment and all your patterns to make sure that they are clear and you won't have these things, you won't have any things to really trip you up or to tempt you in order to
Exactly.
stay with that goal. I want to bring this back to Native elders for just a moment because you hypothesized that Native elders with Alzheimer's would incur significant incremental costs compared to those without Alzheimer's. Can you explain what those incremental costs would be? What that means?
Yes. So again, we were looking at health record data. And when we say incremental costs is in our statistical analyses, we compared controls who did not have dementia were matched with cases of individuals who did have dementia. And we matched across subclasses that we knew were important. So age group, sex, county type, whether it's rural or urban or reservation land, but also diabetes status and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or emphysema status, and whether they've had a myocardial infarction. So we were looking at other things that we know are expensive. They incur costs in terms of the health outcomes, but also saying if we match these two individuals on at least a few variables, what is the added cost of dementia? And that's where those numbers of 880 million to 1.9 billion annually came from.
Adrian, thank you for sharing your research with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Adrian Johnson is a clinical psychologist and assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health based at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. We have a link to her article and resources at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.